Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy
way. Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2018 movie Halloween.
Yeah, we are. Just in time for Thanksgiving.
Yes, of course. Well, I thought it was still a great holiday movie.
Indeed.
So this was directed by David Gordon Green, and it was written and directed by David Gordon Green, written by David Gordon Green and Danny McBride. Now, we know David Gordon Green from Our Brand is Crisis and Pineapple Express, as well as Halloween Kills, the follow-up to this, and then Halloween Ends. The third in this trilogy, Danny McBride, you know, from Eastbound and Down, and he was an actor in Alien Covenant, This Is the End, Pineapple Express, and Tropic Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell me about your history with Halloween movies. Surely we watched the Halloween original movies together when you were far too young.
Yes. Yeah, it was kind of a staple. We went through all of the classic horror series together when I was way too young. So Friday the 13th. Quintessential slasher, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. Even saw the last couple in the theater together. Yep. I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Friday the 13th too. And Halloween, yeah. We watched the originals when I was very little. And then it was like another one of those Big Brother lessons that has stuck with me my entire life. Much like the CR episode about the fifth element.
Oh no.
I don't think this one's gonna have the same kind of turn. But you were a big fan of Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yes.
Which has nothing to do with Michael Myers and has quite a nihilistic ending.
Yes.
And yeah, I just that one has always stuck with me because you talked, you know, for being kids, you know, you were probably what a early to mid teen, and I was a elementary school kid. Mm-hmm. You talked pretty passionately about how much you liked Season of the Witch because it was so different and it had an ending you didn't expect. So throughout my entire life, when people talk about the Halloween series and then people go, yeah, except the third one sucks. I always think, no, the third one's brilliant. And here's why.
Yeah. The
I haven't watched it since I was a little kid.
Oh, but we need to talk about it though, because the third one is amazing, but also goofy as all heck.
Yeah. But that attitude has really stuck with me for my entire life and really shaped the way I'm not even making fun of you.
Okay.
I truly don't believe that.
But
has really shaped the way that I interact with unexpected or unusual story endings, especially the downer ones. I really give them a lot of thought, probably more than I would have otherwise. So I'm. Because of that experience with you watching that movie and how we talked about it. Well, you talked about it. I just listened because, again, I was a little kid. It's really made me open to sort of alternative style endings and seeing the beauty and the value of a movie that doesn't necessarily have a happy ending.
Wow. So
that's my history of the Halloween movies.
Okay, so I owe all of that to going to the book cache a local bookstore.
Love the book cache.
Yes, in the early 80s, and buying the novelization of Halloween 3 before I could watch the movie. There's no way for me to watch the movie at the time because I was far too young, and also we didn't have cable. But I read the novelization, and I figured out, again, pretty quickly that nothing to do with Michael Myers. But I'm not even sure. Maybe I hadn't even seen the original Halloween movies. But the book, because it's a novelization, it really like lands the ending. Like there's no ambiguity in the novelization that in the end of Halloween 3, like the world dies. So, although again, if you look too carefully at any of these things, there's some issues. Let's get into timelines in a second. But first of all, what did you think about Halloween 2018? Initial reaction.
I thought it was great. It was such a competent horror movie. Like really like a true like horror thriller. Because it wasn't really heavy on the gore. But it did a really good job of ratcheting up the suspense. It felt like a really competent throwback, and I'm not using competent as a pejorative, like you would when you're trying to minimize, something like, yeah, that was competent. Like, no, this was like a really, truly competent version of the story. And I was surprised. The beginning had me feeling some trepidation. but yeah, what this movie ended up being, I thought was great. It reminded me about the high highs of this type of movie. And it really evoked that feeling of when we were watching all these movies when I was way too young. Like everyone, you know, there's a lot of crap in this genre.
Most
but every once in a while we'd hit a movie like the original Halloween. Or what was it, like the second or third Friday the 13th was pretty good, right?
Yeah. The third was 3D and on cable a lot. And then we saw a lot of the Friday the 13th, like, I want to say 6, 7, and 8, maybe in the theaters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, like, Nightmare on Elm Street, it was a whole different thing. It took a turn into and really leaned into the camp. I was really surprised because I watched the Rob Zombie Halloweens.
Mm-hmm.
And they were fine. They weren't great. It was an interesting update, but it's kind of empty calories after that. But yeah, I really like this one. This one was just about perfect.
Yeah. You know, I think the same thing. And as it turns out, I've recently done a lot of research about the Halloween series because, like I mentioned before, I listened to two pretty long audiobooks. So it's probably about 35 hours total, called Taking Shape 1 and Taking Shape 2. And Taking Shape 1 is it's by Dustin McNeil and Travis Mullins, and it mixes it gives plot synopsis for all of the Halloween movies, but it also has interviews a lot of times not original by the author, but like taken out of like Fangoria magazine or Rumorg or something. Sometimes the interviews are with like John Carpenter, and sometimes they're with but mostly they're with the writers and sometimes producers of the movie, because it leans heavily into, it tells you the synopsis of the movie, but it also shows like they have somehow access to all these alternate scripts that were submitted. Because, you know, this was the time, like Halloween was the beginning of like the slasher popularity, where you could, you know, the studios thought, oh, this is how we make a ton of money. So they were accepting all sorts of scripts for these properties, especially after John Carpenter, the thing with Halloween 3, where he wanted to turn it into an anthology, but the reaction was so negative. The production company's like, yeah, no, we got to go back to Michael Myers. And John Carpenter's like, yeah, that bores me. So it went on to other people. And so, and then the Taking Shape 2 is all alternate scripts, like dozens of alternate scripts. And it's pretty amazing. Like what they got out of this movie, it wasn't even what they started with, which I guess is probably the case in a lot of movies. In fact, there was definitely test audience reactions that made them change certain things in this movie, which is a little crazy to think about.
This movie, the 2018 version?
Yeah.
Yep. Interesting.
Yep. Now I'm going to have to struggle to remember what those are. But it was... anyway, okay. So here's some timeline of Halloween movies that we need to acquaint ourselves with. So Halloween 1 is the original, 1978. And it was followed by Halloween 2, which is the movie that takes place the next day or the same night as Halloween. And it has most of the same cast. In fact, Jamie Lee Curtis comes back and has to wear a wig or whatever, because I think she had a short haircut for the movie Perfect, if I remember. Anyway, I could be mixing my own timelines there. But then Halloween 3, as we mentioned before, Season of the Witch, isn't part of the Michael Myers universe at all. And then there's, of course, Halloween 4, 5, 6. But Halloween H2O in 1998, and then the follow-up Halloween Resurrection 2002, those accepted Halloween 1 and 2 as canon, but they skip all of 4, 5, and 6 as canon. They just write that out of history. So
I believe you, me, and my future wife saw Halloween H2O on opening night.
I believe so. Yeah, I can imagine. Absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, 4, 5, and 6 were pretty much immediately written out in the late 90s. Sorry, Danielle Harris. Sorry, Paul Rudd. But
I don't even remember 6. I do remember 4 and 5. I don't remember 6.
Nope. 6 was the Paul Rudd years. I don't remember any of the details about it, even though, again, less than a month ago, I listened to like half a dozen scripts about just that one movie. And then Rob Zombie's Halloween and H2 are just reimaginings of the whole story completely. They're just a thing. And like you said, Rob Zombie's doing a thing, and he does his Rob Zombie thing pretty well. I remember really liked, I was so into the first Rob Zombie Halloween when I heard them use God of Thunder, the Kiss song, in such, because he did it in such a way as that you like feel the bass of that song. That song's got some pretty like thumping bass, you know, like a God of Thunder might have. And so Rob Zombie, I like his use of music, of course, but otherwise, yeah, I mean, it suffers from everything. Like, there's probably too much of Sherry Zombie in there, although she's fine. And again, it didn't really interest me as much as it could have necessarily. And then this movie accepts the first movie as canon, nothing else. And then it goes straight to this movie, which is like 40 years later, right? So, and this is first of a trilogy. This is Halloween, and then Halloween Kills, which is available, and I'm going to ask you later if you want to watch it. And then it's going to, the end of this trilogy is called Halloween Ends, and that's scheduled to be, I think, 2022, maybe early 2023. It's hard, after, because I watched Halloween Kills already, and after watching Halloween Kills, I had to kind of be careful and not, like, I watched the movie again for this podcast, this movie again, because it's kind of hard once you've seen part two to like divorce yourself from what's coming, because this is a perfectly good movie on its own. This is a complete movie from beginning to end. And it could have been the end of the thing. It didn't need to be a trilogy.
Yeah. That's funny. I totally forgot that there was another movie after this, that just came out. Yeah, this movie doesn't need a sequel.
No, it doesn't. Nope. Although I know there's a lot of negativity about Halloween Kills. In fact, a lot of the first reactions, like on Twitter, were Halloween Kills ... the franchise. And it's doing a different thing. And I don't want to get, like I said, I really don't want to get into it at this point. But I still like it. I especially like the way it starts, because it, like Halloween 2 in 80 maybe, or 79, it just takes place that same night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like, you see the three Strode women in the back of a pickup truck at the beginning of Halloween Kills. So, yeah.
Now, in this movie, the 2018,
yes,
Laurie Strode suggests that she is not Michael's sister, that that was just the mythology created by the media.
Yeah, the granddaughter like spells it out, says, nope, yep, that's just an urban legend.
Was that not canon in the first movie?
It was not.
Ah.
Yeah, it was the second movie.
Okay, so the first movie, Laurie was just the final girl.
Yeah. Yeah, before that was a thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first movie, I think 5 people were murdered. So this whole town of Haddonfield is freaked out 40 years later. Well, and as one of the characters actually says, again, in the same scene where they were talking about how, hey, isn't your grandma like the brother or the sister, rather, of the guy? It's like, no, no, no. And then the other boyfriend of the best friend character is like, yeah, everybody's all up in arms about something that happened 5 years ago, and he's incarcerated, so what are we even doing? which is, you know, it's a valid point. I like they address these things. I like a lot of things they do in this movie. And yet, I find it, like you said, that you watching Trick or Treat didn't quite scratch the itch of the horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Did this movie scratch the itch?
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
I agree.
This movie reminded me of what a good, like, really entertaining horror movie could be.
Yeah. And they weren't afraid to have fun, too. Being campy.
They were a little campy. I mean, they savaged the reputation of all podcasters.
Yeah, rightly so, though. I have opinions. I have opinions about the professionals in this movie, but that's okay.
Yep.
Shall we dive in?
I think we better.
Okay. So, 40 years after the Haddonfield murders of 1978, two journalists, podcasters,
Aaron, hard finger quotes there.
Yes. Aaron Corey, played by Jefferson Hall, who has had small roles in both Tenet, the Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Sherlock Holmes, and he was in 20 episodes of The Vikings.
Have you seen The Force Awakens?
I have not. Is it worth watching?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, I think I would say Halloween 2018 is to make it an SAT problem, is to the original Halloween as Force Awakens is to Star Wars: A New Hope.
Okay. Cool. I'm in. Yeah. Yeah. Same beats, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's pretty much the same.
Almost identical.
Yeah. Anyway, but
updated in a fun way.
Cool. Okay. Cool. I'm in. And then we have Dana Haynes, the other podcaster, is played by Rhian Reese. And they are traveling to Smith's Grove Sanitarium to interview Michael Myers, who was captured after Dr. Samuel Lewis. Samuel Lewis. Hello. After Dr. Samuel Loomis shot him off of the Doyle House balcony at the end of the movie. At the hospital, we meet, which is basically a prison hospital, we meet Dr. Ranbir Sartain, played by Haluk Billinger from The International. He is the new psychiatrist and has what Aaron was like, oh, you're the new Dr. Loomis.
He essentially is.
Yes, he is. By the way, this movie also really leans hard on the fact that Dr. Loomis was a crazy person. He was also bad at his job. But this guy is obsessed because Michael doesn't speak. He can speak. He just chooses not to. Dr. Loomis was fixated on Michael was pure evil. Like, both Donald Pleasance and Malcolm McDowell, Rob Zombie version, is just like, oh, yeah, he's just evil. And this movie doubles down, and you hear Dr. Loomis's notes saying that not only is the only solution to the Michael Myers problem execution, but he wants to be there.
Yes.
So
look him in the eyes as the light leaves, right?
And he says, I want my ear placed on his chest to hear the last heartbeat. Like, wow, dude, you got some issues. But here's another one of my problems with the professionals here. If you call them professionals, these journalists / podcasters are bad at their jobs. First of all, the guy goes to a hospital. Granted, it's a prison hospital, but it's still a hospital full of mentally ill people, and screams at a mentally ill guy in order to get a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like less than ethical. And then later, they pay $3,000 to Laurie Strode to have an interview with her. which these days, what you do, you don't pay for the interview because that would be unethical. What you do is ask her if she's got any pictures from the time and you pay her for the rights to use her photo. That's what Dateline does and stuff. Anyway.
Clever.
Yeah. Well, it's just wiggling around ethics rules is kind of like one of those. God, why do I always forget the word when it comes up in the podcast? But, you know, what caused the Protestant Reformation? Paying for indulgences, right? Yeah, buying off your sins. Yeah, that's kind of what this is. Anyway, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, not only do they bribe their way into an interview with her, they're really bad at interviewing.
Oh, yeah, and they're really not respectful of the interviewee.
Nope.
Yeah. Who is also arguably a crazy person. Although, aren't we all? So
they really gave her the Sarah Connor treatment in this movie.
So they leave Smith's Grove Sanitarium. Well, by the way, what did you think about Michael Myers in this movie? First of all,
I thought he was good.
He was credited as the Shape. I mean, they called him Michael Myers and whatnot, but they did a lot of work like Wilson from Home Improvement of not showing his face.
Yep.
But I thought it worked well.
They showed enough, you know, just a bit of a side profile, enough so that you could see he had really aged.
Yeah.
Like he looked like an old dude.
Exactly.
So yeah, I thought Michael Myers was good in this movie. Yeah. I mean, he was doing his thing. He was creepy, he was stoic. But also he has like a really morbid sense of humor, right?
Oh yeah.
Like he loves theatrically impaling people.
Yeah. Yeah. And he does like the paws and head cock that, you know, if you're wearing a full on mask, you know, you got to do those like big gestures. It's Michael Myers is interesting in this movie. So the two journalists, after leaving the sanitarium, by the way, Michael's getting transferred out of the sanitarium into like a much scarier place, where he'll have no access to any interviewers for sure.
For plot reasons.
Yeah. Well, and we don't need to worry about it because, spoiler, he's not going to make it to the new prison. He's going to escape. So the two journalists then leave the sanitarium and drive to Lori's house, which is a heavily fortified and decrepit homestead. I disagree with this synopsis. It's not decrepit. It's just out in the woods.
Yeah, it's not decrepit.
No.
She has actually kept up with it. Very, very clever improvements to the infrastructure of the house.
Absolutely, yes. And also the outer part of the house, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she's prepared.
Like, this is the logical conclusion to, like, the whole attitude in the movie Scream. Is yes. you understand the slasher movie tropes and you prepare yourself for them.
Well, and that's the thing. Laurie Strode in this movie is pretty great because she is a survivor of a horrible incident that happened when she was a mere teenager. And her PTSD reaction to the whole thing is to become hypervigilant. Like, so she is constantly aware of her surroundings. She has fortified her house. She trained in all sorts of different weapons. And so much so that when she had a daughter, she also trained her daughter to be hypervigilant. So much so that her daughter was taken away from her because she was an abusive parent. Mm-hmm. And her daughter, played by Judy Greer, of course, is a freaking podcast favorite of ours. She is bitter by the fact that her mom is a crazy person, hypervigilant, and mess with her childhood. Although, as it turns out, some of those tricks come in handy later.
Yeah, so she's bitter, but there's a turn at the end with her character that is so smart.
Oh, yeah.
Just that one moment adds, like, retroactively adds so much depth to what otherwise would have just been a completely cliched relationship.
Yes. Yeah. And I thought the relationship of all three generations of the Strode women, I thought they all rang pretty true.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got the mother-daughter thing. You got the grandmother-granddaughter thing. And it's great. I thought it all worked really well.
Yep.
Part of the, by the way, now I can remember some of the audience things. At the end of this movie, Allison, who's the granddaughter, ends up being a part of the big old finish. But in this movie, or in the original script, she basically just kind of gets damseled out in the end and survived and everything, but wasn't really used very much. And so they empowered her, just like her mother and grandmother, which turned out to be the right choice.
I don't know. I think it would have rang true if she was just kind of a dumb, self-centered teenager who got caught up and stuff.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Well, and she wasn't like super smart or whatever. She wasn't the linchpin of this illusion.
No, but yeah, I mean, they leaned into the kind of overall theme of, if not like female empowerment, but at least survivor empowerment.
Yeah. Right? Yep.
Because Lori survived Michael. Lori's daughter survived Lori. And Allison is trying to survive all of them.
Yes. Yep. And so this Laurie Strode, though, she is broken. She's had two failed marriages. She had her daughter taken away from her. She's estranged from her daughter, and she has a fairly close relationship with her granddaughter. But of course, because of the strained relationship with mom, it becomes interesting. We're going to talk about dad a little bit later, but she also. At some point in the movie, she says she was hoping that Michael Myers would escape so that she could go kill him. And she fully expected him to break out of jail to try to kill her, and she would kill him. And so she was preparing for this ultimate battle. But a question for you. The way it's written, and we haven't got to the plot point yet, but the way it's written, Michael Myers in this movie isn't particularly concerned about Laurie Strode. He's just a killing machine.
Yeah. I mean, he seems to be driven to something, right?
Yeah, but I'll argue that he gets funneled to her house. It was an outside party that set up the whole meeting between Lori and Michael. Hmm. Okay.
I got the impression from the movie that he was going after her, but... You know, I've only watched the movie the once, and now that I am sort of relitigating the events in my head as we're talking, I think you're probably right.
I mean, again, this wasn't my first reaction to it. I think it's other people had mentioned it, and it's like, oh yeah, it turns out his bad doctor set up the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like Michael Myers wasn't having any problem killing anybody. He was happy to kill people right and left. And children. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of the movie this was, by the way, and I was there for it.
Yeah, that's that was a real throwback that I appreciated, which is it's sort of contrary to my current position in my stage in life, where I have no more patience for children in peril as a plot device. But at the same time, if this is a horror movie and I'm supposed to be scared of Michael Myers as a demonic murderer, unstoppable force, evil, they can't give him the Freddy Krueger treatment and be like, well, he just kills horny teenagers. He doesn't kill kids. So right away, he killed a little kid.
Yeah.
So you know. And so, I actually appreciated the child murder in this movie.
I did. And, well, we're going to, yeah, we'll talk more about that, too. Because, yeah, I'm thinking about a similar place in life. If you're painting a picture for me or telling me a story, I would probably steer you away from the child murder. But, yeah, this is a horror movie, and it's a slasher horror movie. So he's doing a thing.
Yeah, and that happens pretty early, and it really adjusts your expectations.
Yes.
Because you're not going to get the treatment that the Nightmare on Elm Street movies did, and even the Friday the 13th movie, the later ones especially, did, where they leaned into the serial killer as the protagonist.
Yes.
This is not that.
No, this is not that. Yep. Then I appreciate that. So anyway, so the podcasters go to Lori's house and they confront Lori in the worst way. And they don't get what they need in the interview. They're not good at their jobs there. And they spent $3,000 of their money to get her to say, I'm a messed up piece of work. And yet I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of anything you want to hear. And goodbye. So they feel kind of disappointed, I'm sure. But we get introduced to Lori in that way. And let's see. I thought Jamie Lee Curtis's performance was really good. Like, she really... the scene at the house with the podcasters especially, she did a really good job and reminded me of some people I know, let's say. Nobody named Anderson. Don't worry about it. But, yeah. Okay, so then we go to the transport is now happening between the patients at the St. Grove or whatever it was. Smith Grove Sanitarium. They're going to the other hospital. And so they're all getting on the bus. And Dr. Sartain, I have to remember because I don't want to say Dr. Samhain. Don't think that was a coincidence. But they get on the bus, wheels on the bus go round and round. And then we see the scene where we have, again, just the same as the original movie. We've got the three girls, or two girls and a guy in this case, walking to school. And so we have Allison, played by Andy Matichak, and her friend Vicky, and Vicky's boyfriend, who I will remember his name later. Anyway, this is where we find out that they kind of rehash the history of Haddonfield a little bit, and how her family's involved in it. And the boyfriend of the best friend is kind of a, I don't know, I thought he did a really good job kind of being like a punk ass kid, but in a way that you could see how he's, you know, he's got a girlfriend and everything. Like, I thought all the teens in this movie, except for Allison, who really, as the granddaughter, I don't think she had as much to do, or they didn't set her up in a great light, I don't think. One of the things this movie did really well, I thought, was they introduced these characters who are just going to be slaughtered, okay? We know that. Like, again, mm-hmm. the kid's killed here coming up soon is a great example of it's just this kid and his father, and they run across a situation, which, like I said, we'll talk about. But this movie gives them just a little bit of backstory or a little bit of fun that kind of invests you a little bit in the characters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I had feelings about all of these characters, most of them. So, and then they immediately get killed. So, you know, there's that. But again,
he was just a little boy who would rather have been in dance class than going hunting.
Well, just on the weekdays, because dancing kind of is his thing. He'd go hunting on the weekends. Mm-hmm. Loves his dad. He wants to spend dad time. Yep. Such a sweet fucking moment in this movie. Really was. Anyway, okay. So we get all this stuff, and we see actually, just like in the first movie, how as they're walking along to school or from school or whatever, you end up seeing the shape in the background by a hedge. Same thing in this movie. Pretty great. Allison goes to class and sees looks out the window and sees Lori, creepy grandma, waiting there outside. And then go meets with her, and grandma gives her the $3,000, which she's like, what am I going to do with this? You keep it. Stop being so crazy, old woman. But still, all very believable, fun PTSD grandma and late teen granddaughter kind of relationship. And by the way, I forgot, or it's not in here necessarily, sorry. When we first meet Karen, who is Judy Greer, the daughter of Lori, and Allison, who's the granddaughter, and their dad, Ray. Sorry, not their dad. Karen's husband, Ray. What'd you think of Ray?
Ray was hilarious.
I thought Ray was great.
Mm-hmm. Ray was trying.
He was, and he was just fun. Again, I wanted to look and see, was Ray on those Sonic commercials? Because he reminds me of one of those guys on the original like Buddy Sonic commercials. But he was just, you know, your peanut butter penis yo-yo loving dad.
Yep.
Yeah. But anyway. By the way, Ray is Toby Huss from The Frontrunner 42 and King of the Hill. Okay. So, sorry. Back to the plot. We have a family dinner. And Lori arrives sort of unexpectedly because, well, Allison expected her mom. Well, Allison wanted her mom to invite Grandma to the dinner to meet the boyfriend, Allison's boyfriend, officially. And Karen is like kind of saying, sure, sure, I told Grandma, but she's not going to be able to make it. You know, Grandma. Assuming, of course, that she never did tell Grandma. But when Lori shows up as Grandma, I thought she did a pretty good scene of like a nervous breakdown in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
It all kind of rang true. Again, I just thought this was a nice portrayal of PTSD and family drama. And it gave you the right sense of, oh, we get everybody's point that they're irritated, but we know what's going to happen. So it's like,
Yeah, I mean, everybody got enough development that you felt empathy for each party.
Yeah.
Like, you understand why Lori needed some liquid courage to show up at this family gathering. But you also see why her daughter is annoyed, and you get why Allison is frustrated at all of them.
Yeah.
And poor Ray.
Well, Ray,
so for the ride.
Ray grabs the new boyfriend who is also along for the ride. And they go and talk about sports or whatever while the women handle each other. But Judy Greer as the daughter doesn't just abandon her mom either. She's embarrassed about her mom. She's frustrated with her mom. But she's like, okay, we're going to go out and take and have a talk. It's not like, get out, mom.
Yep.
So, you know, I like that part of it. And again,
yeah, they were all acting like real humans in a way that you don't really get in most. Well, most movies in general, but especially most like slasher movies.
Yeah. Yeah, because most slasher movies, you're just dealing with 100% superficial stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
This is this kind of character. You're supposed to love him or hate him, but soon he's going to get a hatchet in his neck or something. So, you know, don't worry about it too much.
You know, as a tangent, this reminds me, when it came out on video, you gifted me Cabin in the Woods. Which I thought was great.
We need to con Jason into watching it.
Yeah, I think it's been on the calendar a couple times, but yeah. we just haven't gotten to it. But we should.
Yes. Yeah, that was your tangent.
That's it.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, because that, again, much like this movie, we could chew on Cabin in the Woods for quite a lot. Quite a while.
I mean, sorry, my train of thought there was we're talking a lot about like horror movie tropes, and that is a movie about horror movie tropes in a really that it and they kind of skewer the tropes but also employ the tropes in a way that's completely unexpected.
Yes, I agree. That movie was so much fun for as bloody as it turned out to be.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Jason, you gotta watch that movie. It's so good. You'll like it. It's got a Hemsworth in it. Arguably the best Hemsworth.
Definitely the best Hemsworth.
Yeah. So, of course, as you can imagine, the transport bus crashes. But
if you remind me, I have another tangent about the best Hemsworth in housekeeping.
Okay. So this is where we meet the father and son driving on the road that night, and they're going on a hunting trip. And the father was sort of saying, like, I don't understand why. No, I think maybe the son was starting out saying, you know, it's like, I don't mind going hunting. It's just that, you know, like, can we do it on weekends? Because during weekdays, I've got dance class. And, you know, dancing is kind of my thing. And I think it's just so sweet. Because you don't, like, the dad could be all mortified about the connotations of his young teen son, having dance class. But that's not even part of it, really.
No. Yeah, that's not the thing.
No, not at all. So, and then you don't have time to sit on it either, because then they come across a horrible car crash, or in this case, a bus crash. And dad jumps out to help. Son is obviously a little upset because you've got all these inmates zombieing around in the street. And, of course, dad doesn't come back, and Sun comes out with his hunting rifle. And, yeah, he sees a police officer that has been mortally wounded, we think. And, you know, expecting, I guess, either that he's dead or whatever, he, like, pokes him with the butt of the rifle. And the cop is like, ugh! And the kid is like, you know, like, what can I do to help? And he's like, run. Run. And it's not too long after that that he indeed runs. Or no, he investigates the bus and accidentally shoots Dr. Sartain, which I thought was pretty funny. And then runs back to the car. Annie in the truck. Michael Myers is already there and brutally smashes him on camera. Which, again, you don't really get that very often. Michael Myers, you know, for all his stab credentials, does a lot of head bashing. Again, in a way that I'm kind of there for. It makes sense.
It was very satisfying, especially for the podcaster dude.
Yeah, yes, which we're coming to. So the following morning, Sheriff Frank Hawkins, who's Will Patton from Armageddon, The Postman, Copycat, Romeo is Bleeding, Desperately Seeking Susan, and Silkwood. He explains to a deputy that Michael Myers escaped the transport and will most certainly return to Haddonfield to finish what he started 4 decades earlier. And then we see podcasters Aaron and Dana arrive at a gas station where Dana's got to do a number two. So she goes in to get the key to the ladies' room. And when she's in the ladies' room in her stall, Michael Myers comes in. And this is like a horror movie trope, but there's so much right about this. I love the thing about the teeth over the top of the stall. I like that she banged her head on the toilet base as she's trying to squirm out.
Yep.
And the fact that Aaron comes in to, like, you know, presumably save her, although that's not what he's really there for, mostly to find out what the hell's going on, because he has found some dead bodies in the place. They both get viciously killed, mostly by bashing.
And well deserved, because he was taunting Michael with the mask.
Yes.
And so Michael was there to get his mask back.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, because the mask was in the truck. By the way, they had the original mask that that's what he was yelling at Michael to look at the mask. Does this make you feel anything or whatever? You feel like going to kill Laurie Strode? Like, I didn't say that, but that was, you know, like, yeah. At that point, you should have noticed that Dr. Sartain was all into that, too. It's like, oh, you're just a bad clinician as well. So, yeah. So, Michael, this is where he gets the mask and puts it on. And then Laurie finds about the transport crash on TV. And she is like, okay, here we go. And so she breaks into her daughter's house. So when her daughter and Ray, her husband.
Well, we see her. This is when we see her armory. Yes. Underneath her kitchen, right?
Yeah.
Which is she's great. She's using like the 9-to-5 garage door opener, right?
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. To move her island. Her island in the kitchen is hiding a secret door to her fortified basement.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she's got some stuff. And she's got a bunch of guns. And her backyard is full of mannequins and like, silhouette target that she uses to practice her marksmanship. She also has knives and stuff, too. She's not fooling around. So, let's see. So she goes to Karen's house and basically demonstrates by waving a gun at them as well. How easy it was for her to defeat their security, which was non-existent.
Yeah. By the way, if you're going to use creepy mannequins as target practice, like, I guess I can understand that. I can get on board with that. You want to practice on something that resembles the shape of something that you're concerned about.
Sure.
Why would you keep a bunch of creepy mannequins in your house? That was the one thing where I was like, oh man, she got so many things right about the house. Except for the like garden of creepy shapes that a menacing shape could hide within.
That's true. So she should have had a shape shed.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. Well, again, you know, people with dealing with trauma sometimes aren't the greatest home decorators. So then it's Halloween night, and Michael is wandering around the streets of Haddonfield, and this is where the killing just continues. He goes to his shed and finds a hammer and proceeds to hammer his way into owning a knife, and then goes next door and, again, on camera, stabs a woman through the back of her neck, through her, the front of her throat.
Mm-hmm. By the way, this was like an escalation of him upgrading his weapons, right?
Yes.
He started with the crowbar.
Yep.
Then he upgraded to the claw hammer, and then he got the kitchen knife. I posit the claw hammer is actually the most menacing of them all.
Yep. Like, actually, the crowbar is pretty good, too. But you're right. A claw hammer is a vicious, vicious implement of destruction.
Yeah. Like, I'm more creeped out by someone who has bad intentions and is wielding a claw hammer than someone with a kitchen knife.
Yeah. But again, a claw hammer is an instrument of brute force, and a kitchen knife is a stabby object, and you could do a lot of damage with a stabby object in a hurry.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
depends on what side of the hammer you're using, but that can be a stabby weapon too.
But still, even clawing is not dabbing. Clawing is still brute force with a little bit of punch to it. I don't know. Again, I don't know. I've never used a hammer as a weapon. Or a chef's knife is a weapon either, so I don't know. I haven't used a lot of things as weapons, as it turns out. Kind of a non-weapon guy, really. Not necessarily by choice, but, you know.
Do juggling torches count?
Not as a weapon, but yeah, they definitely count. Oh, I couldn't juggle torches for anything now. There's no way. I would set my house afire. And myself on fire. Yeah, again, this is where I have to divorce myself from the next movie. Because there is an escalation that happens, but I won't talk much more about it, let's say. Okay, so cut to Allison, who's at this like school Halloween party. And she and her boyfriend had announced earlier in the dinner that they're going as Bonnie and Clyde, you know, with a twist. Turns out the twist was the guy was wearing a dress and was Bonnie, and she was wearing, I guess, a suit, an old 20s suit, 20s or 30s suit, and was Clyde. And that was like, it gets the boyfriend in a dress for the rest of the movie, which is kind of funny. But turns out he is not a great boyfriend.
Nope.
Yeah. Because he's kissing on some girl and Allison catches him. And then he tries to gaslight her a little bit and then throws her phone in the punch bowl or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like just a total dick move. But luckily, again, this is Allison and nothing else. She's like, oh no, fuck you. I am out of here. And she walks home. And we'll get to that in a second. But just before her phone gets trashed, she gets a call from her friend Vicky, played by Virginia Gardner, from Monster Party, and inviting her to come over once Julian, the child that she is babysitting, he's played by Jabrail Natumbu. By the way, great kid actor.
Yes.
Kid actors are always hit and miss. I love the Vicky Julian dynamic where Julian's a smart kid.
They had great chemistry.
Yeah, they did. It's great. It's too bad we're not going to see them in a buddy movie.
Nope.
But yeah, so when Allison gets into an altercation with her boyfriend, then, by the way, Cameron, the boyfriend, throws her phone in the punch bowl just as Lori is calling her to tell her to go home because Michael Myers has escaped. So she doesn't get that message. So back at Julian's house, he and Vicky talk about a
very clever way to remove the cell phone as a plot contrivance.
Yes, I agree. Yep. Because, you know, you have to.
You do.
Yeah.
You either have to set your movie in the pre-cell phone age or figure out some way to get rid of cell phones.
Yeah. So, and again, they did just enough. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we have this whole Vicky and Julian thing, which I loved. It's really funny and doesn't take very long. But again, it's another scene that that humanizes them. And then, of course, the boyfriend, Dave, comes over. Dave is the guy in the friend in the scene where they're all walking together, who's kind of, I guess, presumably a stoner and stuff. By the way, Dave is played by Miles Robbins from Daniel Isn't Real, Blockers. But unfortunately, maybe his biggest credit is being the actual son of Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I can see that now.
Yeah, totally.
Have you seen Blockers?
I have not. Is it good?
It's better than it should be.
Okay, excellent. So, anyway, Julian tells Vicky that he saw a masked man standing in the doorway, and Vicky is like, yeah, this is just the imagination of this kid who doesn't want to go to bed, blah, blah, blah. And she puts him to bed as her boyfriend arrives, and but she has to check the closet at Julian's request. This is, of course, where he's like, I saw something upstairs. And she's like, you didn't see anything upstairs. I'll go check. She's like, and he was like, send Dave. Again, great. I guess why we love Julian. And by the way, which is, it, had they killed Julian, that would have been a crime. Like, you can't kill Julian in this movie.
Right.
Julian is too sweet. Unfortunately, Vicky gets killed. But, and I thought it was sort of funny that Dave got the date tattooed on him. And that for as a payment, he was going to get, what did he call it? Dry fucked?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, you do you, boo, I guess. But yeah, unfortunately, Vicky checks the closet and is attacked by Michael. And Julian then flees the house, calls the police. And Lurie is patrolling the streets in her truck, hears the dispatch, and hurries to the house where Sheriff Hawkins is investigating, and he finds Vicky's corpse. And then Lurie shoots Michael.
Vicky's corpse staged as a ghost under a sheet.
Yes.
Which is, it's like a thing Michael does, right?
Yeah.
He did that in the first movie, right?
I think so. And definitely in the second movie, there was something about that too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. And it's like in the moment, there's a lot of dread and suspense as he's creeping towards the sheet to... You don't know if it's just going to be empty or a stuffed animal or if it's really going to be Vicky.
Yeah.
Michael. Of course or Michael. But of course it's Vicky, and it's a little gory, not too much. It doesn't linger, but the movie moves quick enough that it doesn't give you time to contemplate what it must have looked like to watch Michael like stage the body.
Yeah.
In the chair, like just right. Like, is he standing there with, like, one hand on his hip and his head cocked? And like,
yes.
Like, nope. And, like, has to push his shoulder up a little bit more or something.
That's funny. Oh, yeah. And Lori sees Michael through a window, but then when she shoots, again, by the way, she is drunk. And she is just firing a weapon indiscriminately, seemingly, in this residential area. She's not hit Michael because she hits the mirror. It was all her reflection. Excuse me.
Yeah, she doesn't give warnings.
No,
she just shoots.
Exactly. Lori and Hawkins are patrolling behind the neighborhood housing, and they find Michael. Lori shoots him, but she turns the corner and he's gone. And then we go back to Allison walking home from the party. And they have this kid we met at school earlier named Oscar. Played by David Scheid from Fear Street Part 2, 1978. By the way, that's the name of the movie. That's not when it was made. It was made in 2021. Not the Fear Street trilogy on Netflix. It's not bad.
I have not seen them.
Yeah, it's not bad. You know, it's from Goosebumps, so I thought, well, it'd be for kids. Yeah, they're doing some kind of fun stuff. Of course, Oscar, who is like the third wheel or whatever, is walking her home, but unfortunately he decides this is his time to... Oh, by the way, I guess earlier, Cameron, the boyfriend, after throwing her phone and she gets pissed at him, his excuse is, well, I'm sorry, I'm drunk, I'm just stupid. And she's like, don't care, bye-bye. Well, Oscar hits on Allison on the way home, and she's like, you've got to be kidding. And of course his excuse is, oh, I'm sorry, I'm drunk, I'm dumb, blah, blah, blah. Unfortunately,
he ends up playing a game of red light, green light with Michael Myers.
Exactly, yes. And gets pretty gruesomely hung on a fence, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So Allison ends up seeing Oscar's body, and then she runs for Michael. Meantime, Karen and Ray arrive at Lori's house and wait for Allison to arrive. And Hawkins encounters Dr. Sartain and in turn finds Allison during their search for Michael. And this is about the point where we meet the buddy cops. What did you think about the buddy cops?
They were fine.
I thought this was fun. I like the peanut butter and jelly bond me conversation. I think it added something. Again, not a ton. Maybe like a Sonic commercial, actually. But it was just interesting enough that it kind of, if you had just seen the cops and they were talking about nothing, it would have been a pacing issue. But because you see the cops and they're having kind of a fun conversation, it's doing a little Tarantino work, kind of keeping it moving without having to have a ton of like action scenes, if it makes sense.
It reminded me of, I think you made it this far, one of the first scenes of the television show Terriers.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's the two guys on a stakeout and no context is given. And then one of them just starts asking the other one what he thinks about drapes.
Ah, and yes. Curtains, okay.
Mm-hmm. Which ended up being a very sort of entertaining, if not a non sequitur of a conversation.
Yeah. It's kind of what we know from Quentin Tarantino is his. Mm-hmm. Why Pulp Fiction was so fun. But yeah, we're going to have to talk about Terriers too. Absolutely. Anyway, so finding Michael, Hawkins runs him over with the SUV, the police car, and then gets out of the vehicle to shoot him at point blank range, even though Dr. Sartain does not want Michael shot, as you can imagine, because he's a doctor and is concerned with human life. Or he has a plan and he's going to be using Michael to get the culmination of his plan. Because as Hawkins is having this like question about whether to shoot Michael point blank, Dr. Sartain stabs him in the throat with this secret like blade in his weird ass knife. Or sorry, weird ass pen.
Mm-hmm.
Like the pen. Thought it was a strange deal, but it was they lingered in the beginning of the movie on it, so I'm like, what is that all about? And then I think it was like what, the brain attached to the spine and the brainstem?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So and then of course we have a scene which is was it too much that Dr. Sartain then puts on Michael's mask and tries it on?
The whole thing with Sartain was too much.
Yeah. By the way,
it got us to the end, so yeah. It was fine.
Well, exactly.
And it didn't linger. Like this movie was extremely well paced.
Yes, I agree. Then Ray steps outside, by the way. So Ray and Karen and Lori are all in the house, in Lori's house, and there's police officers there. And so Ray steps out to offer them coffee, but finds them dead. And then Michael appears behind Ray and strangles him. Dad is dead now in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Lori alerts Karen to Michael's arrival and sends her to the hidden safe room as she locks and barricades the front door. So Michael breaks through the glass, panels in the door, and attacks Lori, who escapes by shooting his hand with a shotgun, stripping him of two fingers. You'll be happy.
Tell me he was missing fingers in Halloween Kills.
He was, for sure, yes.
Nice.
Lori then patrols the house room by room and seals each room off with security gates.
And I loved it.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Such a clever touch.
Yes. And she encounters him upstairs. And this is when Allison arrives. As Lori and Michael stab each other, and Allison witnesses Lori fall from the balcony. When she investigates, Lori's gone, which is kind of a nod to the first movie where Michael falls off a balcony, having been shot by Dr. Loomis, and is gone. Allison then makes her way to the safe room with Karen, who alerts Michael. And this is where they are at the bottom, like the door to the safe room, like the kitchen island, has tilted away. So you have this passage from the safe room up to the kitchen, right? And you've got Allison and Karen at the bottom. And Karen's got a gun, but Lori has already yelled at her that the gun works better if you load it or whatever. So we do not think that maybe Karen has any skills. And I assume this is the turn you were talking about?
Yeah, when she's at the bottom of the stairs saying, "Mom, I don't think I can do it, Mom."
Yes.
which is just her way of luring Michael into range.
Yes, and then Michael gets into range.
Yeah, it's all a ruse, and she just, like, her face hardens, and she's like, gotcha.
Yeah, so that is fun.
And great for Judy Greer, because I did not, like, I was not enjoying seeing her be all weak and mopey, so I was really glad it was just an act.
Me too. Me too. I wanted that for her, and we got it, so I appreciate that. So, blah, blah, blah. Michael is stunned by the rifle shot. Lori appears from the shadows, attacks him, sending him tumbling down the stairs into the safe room. Karen and Allison leave the safe room. Michael regains consciousness and grabs Karen's ankle. This is where we empower Allison a little bit, because Allison stabs Michael with his own knife, and that's how they escape. Before, she just ran outside the house, and Karen just managed to escape on her own. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyway, you're right. Doesn't really matter. So, as soon as the girls get up the stairs and Michael's still back there, Lori flips a switch and these metal bars spring into place. These really scary, spiky-looking metal bars, which means that this is where we find out that, oh yeah, the escape room is not a hiding place. It's a trap. They have lured Michael into the trap, and now she turns on the natural gas and sets the house on fire with Michael in the caged basement, which is fucking great.
Yeah.
Now,
Lori, I don't understand how there's a sequel, but sure.
Lori is full on stabbed. She's pretty injured. And Karen and Allison are, I don't believe, injured at all, but certainly freaked out. And of course, Ray is dead and a bunch of cops are dead. And they end up running out into the street and hitching a ride in the back of a pickup truck. And then they embrace as they're taken to safety. And that's where the credits roll, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can I spoil the very first scene of Halloween Kills?
Spoil the whole thing.
No. I want you to watch Halloween Kills. But no, the first scene, or yeah, I think it's the first scene, is the three stowed women in the back of the pickup truck. And they see fire engines pass them because the truck's going into town. The fire engines are going out to the storage house. And Lori is like, no! Set the fire on purpose! No! So that's pretty great.
That's actually really funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, so here's where, again, I put in my question. And I guess I could see it either way, but it's argued that Lori's mind, Michael Myers is coming after her, and she is going to win this face-off, and that all comes to pass, right? But mm-hmm. I can see the thing where it was Sartain that led Michael to Lori's house. That was his purpose. He wanted Lori and Michael to meet so that Michael would say something and capture right. what that something was. By the way, I missed the part where... was it Laura? Tartine confronts Lori and asks him like what Michael said, and then at some point Michael crushes his head. So, yeah, there is no Dr. Sartain in the second movie. But yeah, so Halloween 2018, I thought it was great. I enjoyed all of it.
It was. It was such a fun, satisfying movie that I completely did not expect. I mean,
excellent.
We have been discussing doing this movie for a while on the podcast, and just never gotten around to it. I wasn't particularly excited about it, but yeah, it was way better than I expected it was going to be.
Sweet. Yeah. I really want you to watch Halloween Kills. And I mean, we can wait until it's at a natural point, because you probably want, like the way I did it, which I found very useful, is watch this movie again and then watch Halloween Kills, because literally it happens the same night. And there are things that they're referenced that I would have forgotten happened in this movie, because there's lots of little things in this movie that, as it turns out, are loose ends. So
like the boyfriend.
Yep.
Like the boyfriend. That was extremely unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But yeah, it's worth watching. It's definitely worth talking about. Is it as successful as this movie? No. As the second part of a trilogy, now, I guess we're going to excuse, what is it? Why can't I? damn it. Hold on. You know what I'm trying to say.
You got no idea.
Oh, no. Okay. So, why can't I think of the number five Star Wars movie? The Empire Strikes Back. Yeah, that's all. Yeah. So, arguably, The Empire Strikes Back is a better movie than Star Wars. And certainly, even though it ends up on a bit of a cliffhanger, it's, well, it's, there's a lot of loose ends in that movie. But it ends up, and kind of a downer note, but at least it has a pretty satisfying and ultimately pretty exciting ending, which leads you naturally into the next movie. I'm not sure if Halloween Kills is that successful, let's say. I think it does suffer from being number two. Plus, they're doing something else in that movie that I don't want to warn you about, that is interesting, but maybe is not altogether successful. But I do like, I do kind of like this world where, again, and maybe I am being influenced by Halloween Kills by pointing out that Laurie is kind of up her own ass about being a victim of Michael, you know? She sees Michael as the boogeyman, as he is real, and everything in her life can be blamed on him, and he needs to be destroyed at all costs. So, you know.
Well, yeah, but she's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and the thing is, this movie doesn't make him, like, I mean, obviously it makes him sort of an unstoppable boogeyman, but it doesn't imbue him with superpowers, like, as the other movies in the other series, especially Friday the 13th. Because looking back on it, I think as a kid I thought Friday the 13th movies was my favorite series. And Halloween 1, of course, was always good, but I wasn't sure. I love Halloween 3 with all my heart. But yeah, 4, 5, and 6 aren't great. And then I didn't appreciate Nightmare on Elm Street until, obviously, 3, Dream Warriors, because I thought that was campy in a really fun way. And then it just got kind of more silly as that series went along. But
yes,
I think I always thought that the Halloweens were, it was like the third, my third favorite of the series. And that may still be the case, but this is, of all the movies of the three series, this might be, I might have enjoyed this more than the first Halloween movie. And the first Halloween movie suffers a little bit from being kind of a low budget movie, but it was scary.
I mean, it's such an iconic score though.
Oh yeah. Yep. Anyway. So yeah, so it was worth it. It's a great movie. Woohoo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Housekeeping.
Hemsworth. The best Hemsworth.
Yes.
Yeah. Best Hemsworth. I've known for a while. My wife really likes Chris Hemsworth. This is nothing that she's ever like explicitly articulated, but I remember she walked in when I was doing laundry and watching Thor Ragnarok, like when I first got it on video, when it first came out. That was pre-Disney Plus days, so I actually purchased it digitally. And I was watching it while doing laundry, and she came in, and I think it might have been the arena scene. And she's like, oh, they gave him short hair. I was like, yep. And she made this noise that I am not going to be able to replicate. But it was a noise that indicated to me just unequivocal approval from her.
Yes.
That the short hair, she thought, was the way to go for Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
And that was one of my first inklings that, like, oh, this is a thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. Funny. It's fine. And then, relatively early on in the COVID lockdown days, a movie showed up on Netflix starring Chris Hemsworth called Extraction.
Okay.
Which, it's, I don't know if you've seen it. It's actually a pretty fun movie, really good action in it. And he is like the main star, and but it looks really dumb. Like Netflix does such a poor job of marketing their stuff that it looks dumb. The auto preview that plays when you scroll over it just looks dumb. But still, it was an action movie. I was like, well, we're not getting a lot of new movies nowadays. I'm going to watch this. That was my mental note to myself. Like, I'm going to watch this. Maybe when after my wife falls asleep or something, I'll watch it. But she saw it and she's like, oh, we should watch this. Oh, okay. Yep. Suspicion confirmed. Then this weekend, was it last Friday or sometime last week? There was a Disney Plus day. I don't know if you follow this in the news at all.
Did not.
Disney had like a day of marketing where they were kind of unveiling a bunch of upcoming shows on Disney Plus and kind of talking about other cool stuff coming out in the Disney universe. And one of the previews that showed up was for a Nat Geo is part of the Disney Plus suite.
Okay.
So Nat Geo has a show, I think it's called Limitless, coming out starring, it's a reality / lifestyle show starring Chris Hemsworth. And the premise is he is, I think, I mean, this was like a 60 second preview. He is, traveling to different places and talking to different experts about ways to improve longevity. But you know, it shows him doing some kind of crazy athletic stuff. And he's talking about how he's reached a stage in his life where he's starting to feel his own mortality and he wants to know what he can do to make sure he stays in sort of peak form as long as he possibly can, and some of the ways he does that. So I thought, oh, my wife enjoys Chris Hemsworth. There was a similar looking show, may have been on Netflix, that starred Zac Efron. I forget what it was called, but implausibly, that ended up being kind of a fun watch that she dug. A kind of similar thing. He was kind of traveling the world. And,
just as Zac Efron?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a reality show. I think he went to some hot springs in Iceland and was kind of talking about the natural healing benefits of them. He went to some zero carbon commune where they recycled everything, including the methane gas from their waste, like human waste, sure. And was capturing it and using it for power. France has just natural water fountains all over the place, spring water fountains, and the benefits of spring water versus like really filtered tap water. Anyway, so that type of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, well, you know, I remember she ended up liking that show more than either of us probably expected. I thought, oh, this is going to be right up her alley. So I said, I told her, hey, I want to show you this preview of the show. It's the very first frame is a close up of his face. And she's like, oh, what's this? It's like, yep, I was right. It's like a 60 to 80 second preview. And what I didn't realize is while she was watching it, she had like grabbed, because she was doing this kind of behind me. She grabbed her coffee. She had like settled into her comfy spot on the couch, wrapped herself up in a blanket. And after it was over, she's like, yes, this looks awesome. Let's do it. I was like, let's do what? She's like, let's watch it. I was like, oh, yeah, we should. It looks good. It's coming out in sometime in 2022.
Oh, she was like,
what? Yeah, I didn't realize that she was watching it thinking, oh, we're going to just binge all six episodes right now. And she was getting all comfy to do it.
She was in the Hemsworth position.
She really was.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, you know, the guy, I mean, you look at him and you think, Hachi Machi. Yeah. You know, if you're into that. Although, maybe, is that why you're sporting sort of short hair, full beard? I bet you got a really little cape at home. Never mind. Sorry. Okay. I don't want to know the answers to these questions. You're making it work, man. You're inspirational. Your body transformation is impressive.
I have to tell you, this last haircut I got, it took me so long to go get a haircut that I was super shaggy. I didn't realize how shaggy I was, but I went to my normal place, shout out Sports Clips, and I had a barber I have not had before. It was an older lady, but I gave her the same instructions I give everybody, which, if you're wondering, is just a number one, kind of up the sides and back, with a medium fade and just short enough to lie flat on top and do a little bit of a faux hawk bump. Standard set of instructions. Yeah. I think they even have notes in the system that's what I like.
Cool.
And she's like, all right, got it. And she got her clippers and she just dug into the side of my head, and like, I actually heard like a crunching sound, like and I looked, and she had shaved like halfway up the side of my head, and was going around, so it was looking like I was getting like In the Name of the Rose haircut.
Yes.
And she saw the look on my face, and like I saw like just white flesh. She's like, are you okay? I was like, yeah, I mean, it's just a little shorter than I expected. She's like, you said number one's a number one. And she just got right back to it, like, nah, I mean at that point you gotta
in for it. Yes.
But yeah, by the end of it, she made it work. She went stepwise when I was used to them just doing the kind of clip and fade all in one step.
Okay, yeah. No, that one's been alarming.
I was like, I don't know how I'm going to explain this one.
Well, I got a haircut as recently as 3 hours ago, and that was pretty much my instructions are, number one on the sides, and then I brush my hair completely back. So I just don't want it to look like I want it longer on top than on the sides, but still fairly short, but I don't want it to be the shape of my head. And I don't want to look like I'm, enlisting. And so, right. Yeah. So I never thought about the faux hawk bump. That's actually a good description. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise they'll just make it flat.
Yeah.
Give you a crew cut.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want that.
Very literal barbers, as it turns out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, mine is the cosmonaut beauty operator. So, yeah. She's a stylist. Therefore, she's an artist. She's not a tactician.
Nice.
Technician. She's an artist. So, the muse guides her.
That's the type of person my wife would prefer I go see to get my haircut. Sure.
Yep. Yep. Well, I get my haircut in between the time that my wife's hair color is applied and the time they rinse it out and finish her haircut. I sneak in there and have my 15 minutes of haircut and then run out.
Perfect.
Don't even know really how much it costs because she just pays the bill at the end. Yeah. So yeah, the other thing I guess the only other thing I did on my housekeeping was, so my daughter turned 12, by the way, she really enjoys Legends of Zelda. Thank you very much. And she thought the cards were hilarious from the girls, the little poppet things.
Nice.
She's growing up. Again, I think I mentioned before, she doesn't really have any ideas what she wants for presents, even for her birthday, which was last week. So I'd even, we took her out to dinner at her favorite restaurant. I think I may have told you that. I must have. No?
What? No.
What's her favorite restaurant? Oh, no, because we record on a Friday, her birthday was Saturday. We went out to her favorite restaurant, the IHOP.
Nice.
Yeah. She had to talk her mom out of her mom's tree. Because we sat there for 20 minutes without ever being offered drinks or anything. Mm. And it was, there must've been maybe five people working there total, but there's a fair amount of people inside. I mean, a couple dozen, maybe, well, tops. And then once they realized, oh, we've been waiting here for 20 minutes, they were super apologetic. And when we got our food, it was hot and fast and great. And we loved it. But Kelly looked at Journey and said, I'm giving him 5 minutes and we're going to Red Robin. And Journey's like, but it's my birthday. And so, yeah. Anyway. And then it was like, okay, well, you know, you didn't really tell me anything you wanted, so why don't we go out to like a toy store or whatever, and have a little shopping spree, you know, or Barnes and Noble, something, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a girl. The problem is, of course, she's an only child, so she's always gotten whatever she wanted. And now I think she's just done, and she's like, no, I'm good. I'm like, huh.
All right.
But they're having a craft fair tomorrow at her school, so. I told her, well, why don't we take the money I was going to give you to shop and go and support the craft fair? Because you like crafty stuff, and it benefits the school in some way, so especially if you buy food or whatever. So, great. It'll be one of, and it's also a thing to do, which is nice. But because she turned 12, I was like, yeah, now you're eligible to get the COVID vaccine. So we're going to go do that. And Grandma was leaning on it, too. It's like, so she's going on her birthday, right? I'm like, she's probably not going on her birthday, but yeah, we're going to get it done ASAP. So we thought, okay, the Saturday after her birthday, which by the way is tomorrow. But, and she knew it was coming, and she is terrified of hospital things, especially needles. And Kelly and I had already talked about how maybe I should go with her, and Kelly should not go with her. Because the mom-daughter dynamic sometimes doesn't work out great for that. It turns out to be tears all the way around. Everybody feels bad after it's over. And I'm a little bit more matter of fact about the whole thing. And mm-hmm. cheerleadery about it, too. So I just sprung it on her today. I came home from work. She actually was not feeling good this morning. But I told Kelly, because I got off at 2. It was my two-thirds day. And I got off at 2. And I was like, I'm just going to pick her up. We got haircuts at 4. I'm going to pick her up at 2. We're going to go to Costco. Get ourselves inoculated. She's going to get a COVID shot, her first, the grown-up one, and I'm going to get my third shot and a flu shot at the same time. And that's what we did.
How are you feeling, by the way?
I'm feeling great now. We'll see how tomorrow feels. I've heard mixed things. You didn't get it at the same time, did you?
No, I have not gotten my booster yet.
Okay. Yeah.
But the flu shot this year kind of knocked me out more than it ever has before.
Oh, well, we'll let you know.
Not even a bad way. It was just that, like, I was fine. I got it kind of early in the morning. I had a doctor's appointment in the morning and got it then. And I was fine all day. And then at night, I was just like, oh, fuck. Like, my energy just, like, dropped off a cliff.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I got to go to bed.
Exactly. I'm worried. I got to do editing probably either tonight or early in the morning. Not early, but, you know. First thing in the morning, because maybe by tomorrow afternoon I might be feeling a little tired. But and a guy I work with actually got his at the same time, and he's like, don't do that. He was like asleep for like 3 days. But I'm like, oh, I didn't really have a reaction to the first two shots, so we'll see. If I have to tape the next episode from the hospital, I'll let you know. But yeah, I think it'll be fine. But yeah, but it was great. Sneaking up on her was the best thing to do, because now we'd have to worry about the drama of getting ready to go someplace bad tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew it was coming. So, I mean, when I told her, oh, yeah, we're going to Costco. She's like, I don't want to. I'm like, well, I know, but you have to. And then she was like, which arm are they going to put it in? And I'm like, oh, she's mine. Yeah. And then later I told her, like, I said, hey, you know. Here's the sold, you know, like, we were a little concerned. That's why mom didn't go, blah, blah. And she goes, well, it's not like I could refuse. I'm like, that's correct. because, of course, in my mind, oh, there was, if she refused, what am I going to do? There's only so much. And then I already told you, they actually gave her, they stabbed her twice. She was terrified. And she did really good up to the very end. She's sitting in a chair and she's like leaning toward me, like leaning. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't want to do this. I'm like, no problem. The lady who did it is great. We know her. She's like, here's my hand or whatever. And then she took the needle and Journey's looking at me and kind of cringing, but she jerked at the last minute. And so the needle like went tong sideways and scraped across her. I mean, stabbed her and then scraped across. So she's like, oh, I got to go get a new needle. So she went and got another needle and was like, oh, we got to do this all again. But at least at that point, Journey figured out, okay, it didn't hurt all that much. Like it's just a little bit. It's not a big deal. But the anticipation of it, the anxiety of it. I mean, yep. I told her, like, yeah, that's the thing. It's, Yeah, a lot of things aren't all that bad, but when you dwell on it and make it a bigger thing than it is, then suddenly the anxiety is the monster.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. It was fun. And then the winner got her an $8.25 frozen yogurt. Just like,
wow.
Well, she likes herself some popping boba. So she probably had...
That was a weight-based...
Yes.
...purchase.
Uh-huh. Yep, yeah. 100%.
Those add up in a hurry.
Yeah. So, it's like, hey, that works, you know? If that was the bribe, that's fine. In fact, one of the things that's, you know, after we go to Costco, we need to go to Target because we got to get something for Gavin's birthday. I thought that would be inspiring. And then when we were done at Costco, she's like, well, what about Gavin's birthday? I'm like, Gavin's birthday isn't for a month. Don't worry about it. She goes, what? Like, yeah, that was one of the things I was thinking about bribing you. You know, we'll go there, and if you find something, like, great. She goes, I thought the craft fair was a bribe. No, the craft fair was about your birthday. I don't play with those things. I don't turn promises into other threats. At least, unless I have to.
Right. You don't until you do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's if the first three things don't work, then I got to do work with what you have, but. Yeah, that was, again, the problem with having an only child is they're hard to bribe. Like I don't have as many hooks as I have triggers, because I can take stuff away. And that could make life real unpleasant, but, you know, the stick is not nearly as effective as the carrot sometimes. Depends on the subject, I guess.
Yeah.
So, anyway, anything else?
I was on like a Denis Villeneuve high after we watched Blade Runner 2049.
Excellent.
And I was like, man, I'm gonna go rewatch Arrival, because I only saw that movie once, but it evoked like the same kind of like contemplative vibe that a lot of Blade Runner 2049 had, that I was really into. So I was in the mood. But then I saw one of his earlier movies that I'd never seen was on Amazon Prime. A movie called Enemy with Jake Gyllenhaal. Have you seen this movie?
Nope, nothing about it.
I'm starting to get worried about pre-Sicario Villeneuve.
Uh-oh.
Like, there's another movie that I'm aware of called Prisoners.
Okay.
Which, the subject matter of Prisoners has just never been one that I wanted to watch. Are you familiar with Prisoners?
I'm not.
Prisoners, a man's daughter goes missing, and he is convinced that he knows who took her. So he kidnaps the person that he thinks took her.
Oh.
And is trying to get that person to tell him where she is. But it's not clear whether or not that person actually took her or not.
Yeah. Sounds like an emotional roller coaster movie. Or maybe not a roller coaster, maybe just tense, tense, tense.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems very unpleasant. So I thought, well, Enemy sounds more interesting. Enemy is about a history professor who watches like a low-budget movie that was shot locally, and sees like a bit actor in the movie who looks exactly like himself. So he becomes obsessed with tracking this doppelganger down and finding out more about him.
Are they both played by Jake Gyllenhaal?
Mm-hmm.
See, a movie like Enemy with Jake Gyllenhaal, I assume that's about a boyfriend who didn't give a girl her scarf back for a breakup.
His poor sister. She's got, she has like an awards bait movie coming out that she's got to do press for, and all she's going to get asked about is, where's the scarf?
Of course, yeah.
But Enemy, like, man, what the fuck?
In a good way? Worth seeking out?
I don't know.
Okay. Have you seen Nightcrawler?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that's another Jake Gyllenhaal movie that it's interesting. It's worth watching. Did I watch Taxi Driver recently?
No, how'd that hold up?
I mean, fine. You know, to talk about a nihilistic movie, man.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it probably would fall in the same category like as Chinatown. Like maybe if you looked at it under too close a microscope, you'd be like, yeah. But it's certainly like evoked, like all the emotions that it evokes hard. Like when he takes Sybil Shepherd to the movies, it's just so
to the porno.
Yes, it's like, oh my god. And like when he's standing outside the political rally, and security is kind of onto him, mm-hmm. That's a really tense scene. It's pretty amazing. And of course, the end is very interesting. So, by the way, how are you doing with the cold? How cold is it out there in Willow?
It was, I'll get you a update. It's warmed up. When Jennifer got out here this morning, it was minus 19.
Oh,
It is minus 11 currently.
And God forbid there's a wind.
Yeah, it's pretty calm and clear. But we have a two-car garage out here, which is great. But one side is not usable right now. We need to clean it out. And we have an ATV that I need to winterize and store outside the garage so we can get both cars in. So I had to, when I got here, I had to unpack my truck. Which, you know, we're coming out here for a week, so I had a lot of crap to unpack.
Yeah. You're out there for a week? And
yeah, we're going to stay out here through Thanksgiving.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, so I had to unpack the truck, make several trips. Well, when it was like minus 15 at the time.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Very unpleasant, especially after like sitting in a warm vehicle for 2 hours.
Yeah. I have to park outside too, and my car, luckily, so I've had cars because of their age, like electrical leaks and stuff happen here and there, especially as the car ages, and God forbid you do anything. Like I had a dash cam in the car for a while, but turns out, oh no, I can't, because it will just, if I leave it plugged in, even though it's not supposed to be drawing anything, ugh. If it's minus 15, I will not be able to start my car.
Right.
So much so that I have like a big old jump box. But yeah, I've the last couple of days and probably continuing along this next week, I will be starting my car at least every 8 hours. Because otherwise, if I let it sit all weekend, it will not start. It will be bad. So, plugging it in, all that stuff. It's winter. And it's dry. It sucks that it's dry. Like, I was like Mr. Sneezy at work. I didn't have a cold as much as it's just so dry. And so I'm sneezing all the time. It's not great. And of course, people look at me like I'm some sort of a, like plague victim.
Right.
I'm like, I've got all my shots and you guys can fuck right off. I'll wear a mask if you want, but... I'm masking with 16 Kleenexes an hour. Don't worry about it too much. I'm washing my hands. Keyboards are all get drowned in alcohol. You're fine. So, and colds are going around too. You know, Journey had a pretty bad cold the other week, and other people at work are having just plain old colds. It's a return of cold season because of no masks anymore. Oh, here's a fun story. Here, you know what? Are we done recording probably?
Sure.
Okay. Oh, you know what? Hold on. Actually, one thing for the podcast. Listener Michael and I were talking about Blade Runner 2049. And how much I didn't enjoy the movie. I liked all the parts of it.
Explaining to you why you were wrong.
Completely. Yeah, yeah. He said it's because I'm not religious.
Mm-hmm.
He says if you're not religious, you're probably not thinking about the question of the movie, which is about whether what has a soul and what doesn't, and whether that's worthwhile and all that. I'm like, maybe so. Maybe it's just because art is subjective, and I'm not going to like all art, so this just may not be my cup of tea. But he's like, it's because you're not religious. I'm like, okay. Or spiritual is what he said. Didn't say religious. But, yeah.
I don't know about that. It's sort of like saying if you don't have kids, you can't appreciate the movie Children of Men.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's fair. Except Children of Men is a much better paced movie. Anyway. Okay, well, thank you, listener Michael, for continuing to listen. And we will sign off for tonight.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on Films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe rambling. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.